strength and creativity times three. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program devoted to the exploration of the visual arts. Co-host Stephen DeLuque and I produce it here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the Central California Coast. Today's program is in honor of three artists who died this past year. They are Janine Kirkpatrick, Barbara Flynn, and Ina May Overman. In our December holiday storytelling program, Janine's daughter, Rita, shared thoughts about her mother, speaking to a woman's deep creativity and passion for art. That story aired on Wednesday, December 4th, and you can hear it in the KCBX archives under Ears on Art. Barbara Flynn lived on the Central Coast for many years. She was a ceramic artist and owned the business Moonstone Pottery. For several years, she had a regular booth at the Monday Farmers Market in Los Osos. Actually, I first met Barbara at Cal Poly. She was part of the staff of the property management department. It was her job to locate pieces of equipment that were on a master list but were not always accounted for. Certainly, the art department had many a piece of equipment, so she often came to us, and it was fun over the years to recognize her as she would come through the door carrying her clipboard and saying, "I'm looking for dot, dot, dot," and we would go on the search. She took some ceramic classes at Poly, but I believe her interest in clay started even before that. And when she retired, she went into the business full-time of being an artist. She had a love of history and became fascinated with English pottery from the 16th and 17th century. She would create reproductions of some of these pieces, many of which had secrets to them, and you had to learn how to use them, or otherwise you might spill water all over yourself as you tried to drink, or whatever the piece might be intended for. She loved to travel, and fortunately was able to do that in some of the more recent years. As with Janine and Ina May Overman, Barbara was a strong woman with a good sense of humor, but really knew how to take care of herself. Moonstone Pottery is still listed on the website, so you can have a look at both her studio and some of her work, along with her recent studio partner, Richard Rowe. She is a member of the art community, whom I will miss a great deal. As it turns out, Stephen and I interviewed Ina May Overman a few years ago, and so today we thought it timely to replay that interview. I'll share some thoughts about her at the end. Here now is our October 3rd, 2007 conversation with Ina May Overman.
We're going to be fusing and a slumping with Ina May. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Stephen DeLuque, and you are listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced here at the studios of KCBX-FM Public Radio in San Luis Obispo. Today we visit with Ina May Overman, a fused glass specialist who, in her second career after retirement, has decided to start creating beautiful, wondrous works of fused glass. Co-host Krista Hewitt and I traveled to the South County to speak with Ina May.
Good afternoon, Aunt May.
How are you, Krissa?
I'm doing just fine, and Stephen's here too.
Yeah, he is.
Glad to have met him. Pleasure meeting you too.
We're discussing a genre that we really haven't tackled before, which is working with glass sheet, fused glass, as opposed to blowing glass. Do you have a sense of history of that discipline, or certainly you have a history of you and the discipline?
Well, it's kind of a long story because I started out doing stained glass, which when I retired from the city of Los Angeles, I immediately went to Granada Hills and took a stained glass course. I found out that I really want to do three-dimensional type things. So for some reason or other, the University of Northridge, they gave an advanced stained glass course. And that was the very first time that I managed to do some slumping. And it was a very, very odd procedure compared to what they do today. Now, this would be in about 1978. And anyhow, I just came enamored over that. And I thought, oh boy. So I made this into a three-dimensional stained glass, which now Dr. Hayashi has. I actually gave it to him because it was a Japanese design. And I made a matching one later on when I lived here, which he also has. So then I went up to Oregon, stayed for a while, and I came back to Pismo Beach, and then I decided I wanted to live here. And I knew that I wanted to live here because I wanted to take advantage of all of the colleges. So I started out a course with Hancock College, mm-hmm. with Bill Sheehan.
Correct.
And I took all of his ceramic courses. I took George Murrow's classes in design. And then I went on to go to Cal Poly. And in 1981, I took a course with George Jurczyk. It was called Glass Forming, which in those days, it was just really medieval. George was just about one step ahead of us, was about all, because he didn't understand some of it either. And of course, there were no glasses in those days to fuse. We just took stained glass and hoped that it was compatible. So we just had to gamble on that. And I found that this one brand of glass did, and I still to this day use that glass. Summer classes, there was a Mary White came down from San Francisco area and taught us, and then Dan Fenton, who was very well known. These were all summer classes at Cal Poly, of which George was in head of. And then I just kind of went out on my own on that. And then I took Krissa Hewitt's class.
You certainly did.
In jewelry making, of which I incorporated some of my fused glass, which I still to this day have. I'm just wondering what you're going to do with all those nice little design things we had to make that were 2 inches square.
I have been thinking about that too. The reference here is the fact that I am retiring from Cal Poly, and I was packing up my tools from the class, and I was looking around at those and going, I haven't got room for all of them at home, but I think I certainly will bring a few to decorate my studio with. These were little 2-inch squares that students were cutting out as an initial
exercise. Yeah, but don't forget,
exercise.
You have some famous artists there.
I do, and you're one of them.
Sandra K. Johnson, Linda Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah, that was our first introduction to the metal. And then I guess I just went out kind of on my own.
And this career was all on top of another career, right? I mean, you were basically retired by the time you started
doing it. Oh, I was retired, but I went on the grand jury. I was on the grand jury for a year. I was a civil service commissioner for 4 years. Then I went to Cuesta and took their foundry, which I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. Your employment during all of the time before all of these things?
Oh, I worked for 31 and a half years for the city of Los Angeles as a civil engineering designer. Except the last 2 years, I was the first woman public works inspector. And I'm telling you, the contractors just about tore their hair out thinking they had to have a woman telling them what to do. But they learned to love me. And then I retired, and I've just gone on to a different life.
Isn't that nice that retirement allows you that? What sparked your interest in glass particularly?
I don't know. I really don't. I guess it's because you can see through it, and the colors, mm-hmm. the colors. Because I had gone to Pierce while I was working, and I took design and life drawing and drawing and those kind of subjects, but there's not much you can do with that. Not that I wanted to sell these things, and but I you can't keep everything that you make. You know, so I've been very fortunate. The Art Center has probably sold more of my work than any one place, and I think I've generated at least $10,000 to them from my work, so I feel very good about that.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's just kind of a routine that in some window area near a door, near, you know, something, that there is a piece of yours hanging so that it is catching the light. And I've been there many times when people are going, whoa.
I'm almost 85. I'll be 85 in November. And I am beginning to slow down a little bit.
I guess you're entitled. We're sitting in your living room that definitely has a theme to it.
Egyptian.
And you've picked it up in glass. You've picked it up in, obviously, some objects that you have probably purchased more than made, I would assume.
Well, I made all of these things.
Oh, okay. Count me wrong.
No, but there are some things that I have bought. I mean, naturally, I buy the little statues. I can't make those. But most of the decoration type things I've done, and the lamps I made. And I got a palm tree in here. Two of them, in fact.
And this was inspired because?
I went to Egypt in 1989. Best thing I ever did for myself.
Just pick up and go? Was it a tour? Was it a...
It was a tour. It was a tour. It was in November, and it was good time of the year, and I just thought it was wonderful. I'd never been in that type of a foreign country before. And I made this gaudy table.
Folks, she is the one that's defined it as gaudy.
It's actually beautiful.
I mean, I got just... these floor tiles from the Luxor, and I went from there. I had fun. I make a lot of things for myself.
Well, it's really nice to be able to just do things when you want for yourself and not have to worry about everything having a price tag on it, and the things that are a price tag, those are those things.
I decided when I moved here that I would not go and get one of these great big houses. I thought this nice little house is just suitable for me.
So where do you do all this work? Not here in the living room. I mean, you might be thinking here, but...
Well, I can't show you on the radio.
No, but we... You'd be surprised what we can communicate.
Well, you want to take a look?
Sure.
Okay. This is my very first Egyptian thing I made, and I made this actually in Northridge back in 1958, 59, around in that time.
It's a mosaic.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful time. And,
well, one of the places that I work is here, and I'm working on a project here. Now, this is something I really hope to get done, and that's only part of it. I have most all those pieces cut out. In the garage, I have a great big kiln.
Before we leave this one, you're working pieces of glass on top of a drawing that you've made.
Right. I do all this drawing. I draw everything out, then I cut out all the pieces. Now, most of all these pieces have already been cut out there elsewhere.
So all these individual pieces in terms of the fusing process will be put onto one or two other sheets of glass?
They'll be put on clear glass.
Back and front?
No,
or just one?
Just on the back of it. And it's going to be four pieces of glass, so I have to design this to where I'm going to fuse this outer ring first to set the glass, and then I can come back and put the other pieces on, which you do by glue, and then I can carry it in one piece and put it in the kiln. That's the only way I'll be able to get these pieces to go back into where they belong.
The glue is just, it burns off in the kiln.
It burns off, and it's just ordinary school glue.
And is this a reversal of the image, or is this the...
That's it, but there's a lot more to it.
Right, you're not working backwards.
No, mosaics, you do work upside down, I understand.
Quite often, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't. This is my clay mess out here. Thus, I have a wheel I don't use very often. This is my big, basically, the kiln I use most of the time. And this is a kiln that I pretty well had them design at Paragon, and they now produce this kiln.
It's
a prototype. It's what I wanted. It's got, on the top, coils around the side and on the door.
Okay, because they often didn't have them on the top?
Not on the top, and that gives you an even temperature over your glass. See, most of your kilns that people were using were ceramic kilns.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, or enameling kilns. Yeah.
Right. And they didn't give even temperature. But now they have glass kilns up the kazoo, so.
but you helped them.
Well, I specified that this is what I wanted, and they made it for me, but now they produce it. And then this is just a little kiln that I do test work in.
You are listening to Ears on Art. Today's guest is Ina May Overman, and the topic is fused glass. We rejoin her now as she shows us another important room in her house.
Now we go out. This is basically where I do the glass cutting. I do the design in that room there you saw, and I do most of my glass cutting out here, or sometimes I in there, but most of the time right here. And I have tools, but tools. And the fact, the fellow that I took the stained glass with in Granada Hills was the one that developed the Glass Star grinder, which is very famous now. Everybody has a Glass Star grinder, most everybody. So I was very fortunate. Huh. But in those days, we didn't have grinders.
So glass fusing really came fairly late in the glass world. I mean, obviously, people have been blowing glass for centuries.
Yes. Well, glass fusing has been done, but it was just like mosaics, went out of fashion, more or less, and it never got going because these kilns weren't made for it.
So basically, you're dealing with a minimum of two layers of glass that get heated and fused together. About how long does it take to take the glass through the fusing process?
I can bring it up probably within about 4 hours. I can get it up to its melting point, and then it takes probably another, bringing it on down and letting it cool off, probably another 5-6 hours. And even glass has an annealing.
Annealing is a term that basically says we're taking stress out of a material so it doesn't
explode. Same thing with your metals.
Yeah, with the metals so that we can hit it, and
right,
with glass so that it doesn't go
right.
Ping! But is that a good imitation?
That was very good.
I listen to these craft programs, and they show all these fusing artists, and they tell how long their stuff has been in the kiln, and I think it's a bunch of hooey.
I guess glass has that definite property that it's always in motion, even though it doesn't look like it to us.
It's a liquid.
Right.
It actually is a liquid. George taught me that.
Yeah.
This was a shed that my son-in-law, who has since passed away, made for storage. And I then thought, oh, this would be great. I used to do it upstairs, and I got to where I couldn't. I have a little loft in my garage, and I can't carry the glass up there anymore. Mm-hmm. So I redid this, had it all wired, and put insulation in and everything. Perfect. I even got a heater. The only thing I'm lacking is telephone, and I'm going to work on that pretty soon.
You had talked earlier about your enjoyment of working three-dimensionally. So the glass is coming in flat sheet. You're cutting it up. You're fusing it.
Well, you slump it then.
And then talk about slumping.
Well, slumping's over in molds or into molds, bowls, and but I used to do three-dimensional over molds, but I don't hardly do that anymore because I'm getting lazy. You fuse it first, and then you slump it a second time over, so it's running the kiln actually twice.
A lot of the work that I've seen over the years that you've enjoyed leaving some open spaces, often kind of, not grid patterns, but I mean places where they're areas of glass and then a space where things bridge across. And
well,
besides the transparency of the glass, there's a dimensional nature to that.
Yeah, but there's a method for that. It's because I quite frequently, if it's a one solid flat sheet, I will get sometimes a bubble will form and then ruin the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So if I put those little strips and holes in it, I don't have that problem. Now, I've been keeping that a secret, but... We got so many fusers now in the county that they don't know all these little secrets.
Well, the small amount of it I've done certainly lets me know that the whole process of the kill firing is absolutely critical to the finished outcome, right?
Yes. But I do utilize a lot of my engineering in this work.
Well, that I think was maybe why I asked the question before. So that carryover, what sorts of ways do you find yourself making use of it?
Well, in my designs are very rigid, and the way I make form it, I just design it to where it will work and things of that nature. That's just an engineering mind.
Your templates that we see lying about here for your various designs are very, very technically drawn.
I was a draftsman in the days when you drafted. If I had to do it on the computer, forget it.
Right.
Because I refuse to learn to work a computer. Anyhow, that's it for that. This room.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's always great to see how people make good use of available space. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that you were using glass that other people were not using, so have you had to teach yourself a lot of stuff about its temperatures and factors and coefficients?
Well, I just use one brand of glass. It's a German-made glass, and it's basically was made for stained glass, you know, and I just have been able to use it. And since I've used it, oh, this has been many years now, they have now made that where all of their colors are compatible. Not because I use it. They don't know me from Adam, but but it's because of the fusing world.
Right.
It's called GNA, Desaug glass. I'm now using what Spectrum 96. I find it's easiest to cut of all of the new glasses.
Do you end up with buckets of scrap pieces?
Yes, and I utilize a lot of my scrap in my bowls and stuff that I make. That's obvious.
Waste not, want not.
Right.
Especially with expensive material.
Right. I'd like to be able to do more mosaic. But I haven't found a glue that you can glue onto a surface that will not show streaks through it when you hold it up to the light.
So the UV glues don't work.
That's too expensive.
Ah.
I pay a little tube of that. It runs around $5. But I've now got a new glass that Loctite's put out that's called glass glue, and it's not required to use UV. But I am not using that either. It's too expensive. But I haven't got that far yet. I will. I want to show you my big pride and joy.
Okay.
Which has nothing to do with the art world.
That's fine.
It's the automotive world.
Well, you're defining it as not part of the art world.
It was in my past. The automotive customized car and everything was in the past. I used to show cars. I'm sure you'll know what it is.
Well, my goodness. A Shelby GT,
huh? And the funny part of it is I don't even know how to drive it. My daughter has to drive me around.
Yeah, that's a classic.
I have done nothing to this. This is a brand new one.
Uh-huh.
2007 Shelby GT500. But I used to have one in 1968, and I was determined I was going to get another Shelby.
Mm-hmm.
And here it sits.
Here it sits.
In all its grabber orange color.
You made reference to some other car that you had shown or
Yes,
done.
I had a 1952 Lincoln, which I completely redesigned and had it redone by Valley Custom, which was very well known in those days. And I used to show it. I was down at the Pan Pacific Auditorium. I think that's what we call that place.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
Yeah. Twice in the Motoramas. And I've done a lot of things automotively. My brother and I, we traveled clear down to almost Guatemala following the Pan American Road Race. I've just done a lot with automobiles during my past.
My sense is that this has been a fairly good kind of blending for you over the years.
I've had a very, very good life. My husband was killed in the war, the Korean War, and I raised my kid, but I had a great family that helped with that. I've had an excellent job, and I've done exciting things, and I'm very happy with my life.
And it seems that you're continuing to do so.
No, I can't complain.
Well, I mean, there's an obvious sense of fun in the colors, the use of the glass speaks to that fun. Letting people know that there's definitely, as they say, life after retirement.
Oh, definitely.
Well, it appears that, you know, you've figured out a whole lot of things and done problem solving, which is obviously part of an engineer's job, is to figure out solutions for things, right? So,
well, I've done a lot of firsts too, and that's
right.
What I like.
Well, thank you so much for giving up part of your afternoon so that we could come and learn more about what you do. And it is definitely impressive, and I have always enjoyed walking by the Art Center or walking in and seeing one more piece hanging there. So
I'm very fortunate. That's why I like to do it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's it.
That can be it.
Ina May was just that kind of person. When she said it was done, it was done. Our history goes back a long ways. Not quite sure where we exactly met, but chances are we overlapped at the Cuesta Foundry classes. But most of my memories have their origins at the San Luis Obispo Art Center. For many, many years, the Art Center was kept open by volunteers. It was open 6 days a week, and the standard shift was from 11 until 2. The late afternoon shift was handled by some meagerly paid employees. I don't know if Ina May was there once a month or more often, but it was such a treat to walk in and find her behind the desk, always greeting people with a cheerful hello and ready to share some story. I have always counted on her to be very straight with her judgments, with her opinions, with her take on whatever might be happening. She was an active member of the Central Coast Craftmakers, an affiliate artist group of the Art Center, which in the early days had an annual juried exhibit. Since we were all volunteers with that, it certainly required people coming in and doing their share, and Ina May was often one of those volunteers. The reference was made during this program to the fused glass window hangings that Ina May would regularly display at the Art Center. In fact, you really could count on one of them being in a window just about any time you were there. I will regret for a long time that I never purchased one. Not quite sure why I wasn't that bright. As time passed, it was fun to watch the work grow. As she says, they showed her engineering mind. They were full of color and always a little element of something unexpected. With her death at 91 goes a chunk of the Art Center history, and admittedly, I'm feeling that emptiness more and more. In the 80s, it was definitely a place where we met, became friends, challenged each other, and enjoyed not just our art, but that of many other people as well. It was a special time. I will miss her loyalty. I will miss her friendship. And most certainly the art community has lost a strong and vital member. To see some of her work and to get a full description of her redesign of her 1952 Lincoln Capri, simply do a web search for Ina, I-N-A, May, M-A-E, Overman, O-V-E-R-M-A-N. You have been listening to Ears on Art. Today, we have been honoring three artists whom we unfortunately lost in 2013. Janine Kirkpatrick, Barbara Flynn, and Ina May Overman. I am Chrissy Hewitt, and
this is Stephen DeLuque. Thank you for listening.